I think of the story in the Gospels where the disciples try to cast out a demon and they can't, and Jesus is like totally frustrated with them, and he says, "Yeah, this is, you unbelieving generation. When will you learn?" or something like that. This one only comes out by prayer. Yeah, so like it's the same here. Like nothing comes easy. A lot of prayer has to go into everything that we do. And I'm not used to putting that much effort in terms of prayer into the things that I do. And so I've had to learn that. And then I've also just been so surprised by how much of this honestly is about me and me growing as a disciple. Me learning to connect more with God, me learning to keep more in step with Jesus.
Welcome to Discipleship Conversations, a Mission Alive podcast with Jeremy Hoover and Stephen Carazell.
Welcome to Discipleship Conversations. I'm Stephen Carazell. I'm here with Jeremy Hoover. This is part two of our conversation with Blake Birchfield. Looking forward to hearing more of his story. Blake is a disciple maker, church planter in South Dakota, among the Lakota people on the Pine Ridge Reservation. He has a great story, as we've heard in part one. If you haven't heard that episode yet, we encourage you to do so, to hear how Blake and his wife Katie got into church planting. And that was a fascinating story. In this one, we're going to talk a little bit more about what discipleship looks like, which is different than what we've kind of heard from our other church planters, because many of them start with some kind of community right away, and Blake is not doing that. It's a very different kind of environment that he's working in. And so the thing that stood out to me, Jeremy, in this conversation was when he said he was surprised by his own discipleship growth, that this process of being a church planter, a disciple maker, is, it kind of took him off guard into how he is developing as a disciple. And I think that's important. I think we forget that as leaders or as ministers. I know that I forget sometimes. I am a disciple and I cannot lead people in that. I cannot make disciples if I am not becoming one more myself along the way. Otherwise, it's just a show, I think. And so that really encouraged me, that our work as leaders, as ministers, as disciple makers begins with us as being disciples and growing as disciples. Jeremy, what'd you hear in that conversation?
Yeah, that really stood out to me too, the conviction that he shared around having to every day listen to God and learn how to obey what God was telling him. I was really struck by his description of his morning routine. And I'm not going to detail that routine, but he spells out what he does. But he had a lot of conviction around that routine that in fact in the interview brought him to tears about that connection with God and his absolute need and dependence upon it. And so I call attention to that. I want our listeners to really hear Blake and his humanity and his desire to be obedient to God. And it's just such a great interview again. And I think we ought to just jump into it and let the interview speak for itself. Welcome back to Discipleship Conversations. This is part two of our conversation with Blake Birchfield, a disciple maker in South Dakota. This part of the interview, Blake, we talked about, is going to kind of focus more on discipleship and on how you see that playing out in your particular context. But I want you to think about, as you've been on the ground now for a couple of years, maybe a little bit longer than that, you've obviously learned some things. If you think back to what you knew when you first started, what's something that you wish you knew then that you know now?
About ministry, just, about working with Native people, or?
No, maybe you can answer both. Just what's something that you've learned that would have been helpful to you at the very beginning?
It was really, really hard fundraising. I had to sell a company, start a company, and fundraise, and then move. And that was really, really hard. I wish I would have known that it was only going to get harder once we got here. I wasn't surprised in a lot of ways that it was harder, but I was definitely surprised by how difficult and how formative and how heavy that it actually was. And I'm not saying that nobody prepared me for that or tried to prepare me for that. I can't tell you how I would prepare somebody else for that, but that is just the hard fact right there, is that church planting, missions, all of it is hard, like with the capital H.
Can you flesh that out a little bit more in terms of what did you find hard, what became harder, maybe how you've grown within resilience through that?
Yeah, so nothing comes easy. I think of the story in the Gospels where the disciples try to cast out a demon and they can't. And Jesus is like totally frustrated with them. And he says, yeah, this is, you know, you unbelieving generation, you know, when will you learn, or something like that? This one only comes out by prayer. So it's the same here. Like nothing comes easy. A lot of prayer has to go into everything that we do. And I'm not used to putting that much effort in terms of prayer into the things that I do. And so I've had to learn that. And then I've also just been so surprised by how much of this honestly is about me and me growing as a disciple, me learning to connect more with God, me learning to keep more in step with Jesus in my own personal life. I've really been surprised by that. So I think I said this whole thing has been very formative. It definitely has. So
that's a fascinating insight to, I think what you shared is that if you could have known at the beginning that it was going to be hard and get harder rather than easier, that would have been really helpful to you. And I know you and I have talked about how church planting has really exposed our own weaknesses as disciples and our own need to rely more and more on God and draw closer to Him. And I think you sharing that is going to be a powerful story for anyone who's listening to this, that church planting is not, it's not the glorious thing all the time that people think it is, that it's fraught with difficulty and self-doubt and challenges. And if you're not going to be willing to grow personally as a disciple, you're just going to run into challenge upon challenge. I think that's great. I really appreciate you sharing that. Suppose Todd said, hey, I'm talking to another couple that wants to go and plant churches or make disciples among Native people in a different part of the country, what kind of wisdom would you have for them? What might be one or two things that you would want to pass on to that couple from your own experience?
Oh, man. You probably need to forget a lot of the things that you've learned about church planting. In general, Native Americans have not had a good experience with white European heritage people, with the U.S. government and with the church, the Christian church. And to the point where they just don't seem interested at all in a white-led church. And you just need to come to terms with that. That's okay, because there are other ways forward. And quite frankly, the other ways forward may even be better. For you and I, growing up in a traditional church, and I mean, no matter where I was at in life, spiritually, no matter where I lived, I mean, I was always at church. I was at church every Sunday morning. I could not imagine my life without the building, the songs, the sermon, and communion, all that. I could not imagine my life without that traditional brick and mortar institutional church structure, form, all that. And I still have difficulty there, right? Because what God is leading us to do here just isn't going to look like that as much. It can't if it's going to be successful. What's really critical here, I think, number one, is that people grow in obedience to the teachings of Jesus, and that they experience the transformation and the fruit that comes from that. That they become real disciples. Past that, just in regards to church, I think Mike Breen said this. So like, if you have a church, then you don't always get disciples. But if you have disciples, then you'll get church. I think that's very much true. I haven't experienced that personally, but I'm kind of hanging on that. And those elements of church that I mentioned, like teaching, communion, prayer, worship, fellowship, those elements have to be there. But how that plays out, what that looks like, the form of all that, I don't think it has to look like the traditional institutional churches that you and I are familiar with and used to. So, but I can't tell you what that is going to look like. And so get used to that. Get used to not knowing where this is going, what it's going to look like, and learn to walk by faith in that regard.
So you kind of laid out a little bit of what discipleship looks like about in regards to following the teachings of Jesus. How does that conversation go when you talk about discipleship? Are you talking about those specific things? How do you think about how do you begin a conversation about discipleship? How does a conversation develop into a conversation about discipleship? And when, you know, I appreciate very much just the background that you've given. Native American populations have not had great interaction with probably a lot of things in white culture. And so I would imagine some of that begins with just trusting relationships. And how does it move into discipleship in your mind or in your plan or just kind of the way you've experienced things so far?
Yeah. With Lakota people, one of the good things is that so we start from a bad place because of, you know, all these negative experiences with Christians, with the church historically. But we also start from a good place in that they're very spiritual. And they could never imagine life divorced from that, you know, a deep, vibrant spirituality. And they want to talk about spiritual things. They are a people of prayer. And like I've learned from them about prayer. And so having spiritual conversations, speaking spiritual truths and stuff like that, weaving that into the conversation, telling like the parables to someone in particular, you know, like from scripture, using that, talking about Jesus. They like Jesus. They don't like his people, but they like Jesus. And I mean, I've heard people say that. I don't really care much for his people, but I like Jesus, you know? And so all that is just, those are great connection points. And that makes it easy to have those conversations. They also, I think, are very aware that their people and their culture are oppressed and struggle, that they are disadvantaged, that things are not good. Some things are, some things aren't, right? You can say this about everyone, but Native Americans, I do think suffer as much or more than anybody in this country. So they're very aware of that. They're very aware that things need to change on several different levels. They're aware of their own social problems, and they are very aware that there is a better way to live life than some of the people around them are choosing to live. So, and these things like the problems, like it the problems are so big, like it's unavoidable. You know, you got to talk about the problems if you're going to become friends with and develop a relationship with like a Lakota guy. And so we talk about the poverty, we talk about the alcoholism, we talk about the abuse, and so we just go back and forth and talk about our experiences. And I spend a lot of time listening, and I try to honor people by doing that, by just being a good listener. And then I share my ideas, my beliefs. I inject biblical truth into the conversation. So that's where we're at in terms of discipleship. You know, that's really where I'm at. I'm at this point, like I'm having a lot of good conversations and getting to know people, but slowly moving towards having kind of like a focused, highly contextualized Bible study where we center conversation around scripture and around Jesus, and we commit to doing the things that God is calling us to do as we learn about this through scripture. So we're moving towards that.
So a lot of times we ask people about, you know, what does discipleship look like? And we've kind of asked you that as well. But that's also assuming that a lot of it is wrapped around community. I mean, when we talk to church planters, it's usually the formation of community and discipleship comes through the community. And with your context, it seems that that's not the starting place for it. It's a more individual relationship. So like, how does Christian community happen for you as a family or with anybody you've, you know, talked to at this point that's leaning toward Jesus?
Yeah, we are also involved at a church. We attend the Hot Springs Wesleyan Church on Sundays. And we've gotten pretty involved there. My wife is on staff there. My wife is the children's minister at the church. It's a small church, around 100 people in attendance on Sunday mornings. A lot of young families. So we've been able to have Christian community there through that church. And everybody there is real supportive of us and our work. And have even helped out in some of the things that we're a part of that we're doing with Lakota people. We have a small group that meets in our house on Sundays and be people from the church, two, three other families. And through that, you know, we encourage each other and we disciple each other. So that's all been really good. My kids are connected with the youth group and involved there at the Wesleyan Church. But our time there is limited. And we know this, they know this. And as our work develops more among Lakota people, that's really where our time is going to be spent. So
how would you finish this sentence? To be a disciple is to be concerned about.
Oh, the, you know, that's a really good question. That's an interesting question. And I think my answer might change depending on the season that I'm in. The season that I'm in right now, I would say being a disciple is being concerned with the opinion and approval of God over and above anything else. So that's just where I'm at. I have to endure a lot of relational stress, and I'm currently having to just die to the opinions of others and just concern myself with the opinion and approval of God above everything else. So that's how I'd finish that season, that sentence right now in the season of my life.
I kind of hear that as somewhere in line with some of the things you said about how hard it's been. And the difficulty of, you know, just the journey is that's a bit wrapped up in that. And just your own, how this has shaped you as a disciple, this whole project has shaped you as a disciple as well. I think that's good. I think that's overlooked sometimes, that we often go in, whether it be in a traditional church setting as a minister or as, you know, walk in somewhere. I wouldn't say it, I wouldn't acknowledge it, but in some ways I think I'm fully formed, and that whatever we enter, we're also entering as learners, as disciples. That I've referred to my work as a minister as a way of carrying out discipleship, which means I'm constantly learning. And so I'm glad you bring that up about you and Jeremy is, you know, I think maybe leaning more into calling you a disciple maker rather than a church planter at this point, because a church planter assumes some things that aren't where you are at the moment, but disciple maker is the key aspect of that. You know, that we all would be considered ourselves disciple makers, but sometimes that has a different picture that has some assumptions that are wrong in that as well. But it begins with us being disciples ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's really inspiring to hear that from you, because I want to look at my own work as one of discipleship for me, because I can't lead other disciples without engaging in that transformation in my own life. So I appreciate that perspective on your part.
So Blake, as you think about discipleship there in your own context, as you grow as a disciple, or even amongst the folks that you're getting to know, or with the group that you're working with from the church, what would you consider to be a discipleship win for you in any of those contexts?
The big win for me right now would be bringing together a group of Lakota people for a Discovery Bible study. And right now I'm working on, with the help of a Canadian missionary who's working with First Nations people in Northern Ontario. I'm working on developing kind of a highly contextualized DBS that he calls a faith circle. And I think that'd probably be an appropriate name for it here in our context with Lakota people. So the big win for me right now would be starting this highly contextualized Discovery Bible study with a group of Lakota people. And that's what I'm working on. That's what I feel like a lot of the last 2 years has been about, is just kind of laying the groundwork in some relationships so that one of those can start up. And so we talked about discipleship. I really think that coming together for this Discovery Bible study and the teaching, the accountability, encouragement towards taking action and doing what we learn, what we hear from God through the study of Scripture, coming together as a group, like forming community, coming together as a group and helping other people, encouraging each other to share what we learn, the gift of what we learn from God through the Discovery Bible study, going out and sharing that with other people that we care about and love. All those things, man, for me, that'd be a huge win. That's where the rubber meets the road. So that's what I'm working towards.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Thank you.
Where do you draw your encouragement from, Blake?
These days, just connecting with the Lord. The chair that I'm sitting in right now and doing this interview, I wake up in the morning. A good day for me, a good start, is I get up and I get a cup of coffee, and then I make the bed and just kind of make everything kind of neat and tidy here in my room. And I turn on a lamp and I just sit and I read. And I read scripture, and then I just spend time with the Lord. Oftentimes this has just kind of become the habit. Like I just sit down with my cup of coffee, and I take a deep breath, and I just say good morning. And I just kind of begin this time of fellowship with God. And it has become like what a, yeah. So like my voice is kind of shaking here, 'cause I'm tearing up. That's like the air I breathe, man. And when I get out of that rhythm and I don't have that time with God, you know, I really just kind of, I kind of lose my way a little bit. So this has become everything to me. I'm super grateful, you know, for Mission Alive and like the discipleship cohorts, because I think through the cohort, and especially this last one, since the curriculum and everything has kind of changed, and it's really focused on listening to God through prayer and scripture and everything, that's really helped kind of develop this rhythm and this connection with God. So yeah, that's where I get my encouragement.
I really appreciate that sharing from that perspective. It is hard to think about church planting without the context of a church. I think that may be difficult for maybe some of our listeners to wrap their minds around that we bring a particular culture with us whenever we talk about or actively participate in church. But I think we realize that sometimes we can actively participate in church without really growing in our faith, without really connecting with God in our lives. And it's not that I have to replace the community with only this connection with God. Is that these two things exist together, and they exist in different kinds of balances. And I that's kind of what you're showing, I think, what you're living with. And I would imagine is a bit of a struggle going from, just as you've described, of a life of a big church and family in the gigantic metroplex to a completely different type of context there in South Dakota. I really appreciate the work that you're doing. And I'm encouraged by the conversation with you about that. Goes back to the time when we were in a discipleship cohort several years ago, and mm-hmm. I appreciated the heart that you represented, you and Katie both represented during that. And so I'm just excited about your work, and I know it's a long, slow process, particularly with what's going on in the world with the pandemic over the last 18 months has hindered it in many ways, but we're praying for you and your perseverance and help in that area. Someone wants to get in touch with you, find out more about what you're doing. How would someone do that?
Yeah, we have a website with all our contact information on it, lakotapeace.org. So you can look us up on the website for sure. Also have a Facebook page, and our nonprofit is called Peace Initiative, and a Facebook search would probably bring up the Peace Initiative page. I'm not as active on that these days, but yeah, connecting with us through the website and then filling out a form on our contact page of the website will get you on our email newsletter list. And I send out newsletters pretty consistently, usually every month. I've kind of slacked off a little bit on that this summer because I've just been going so hard, but that's a good way to connect. And like I said, all our contact information is on the website, lakotapeace.org. So you can definitely reach out to me personally through an email or phone call. So
that's, I appreciate that. I was spending, just before we got on the call together, I was spending some time on that. I really enjoyed the images of a lot of the Firewood project, and, kind of knew about that story for a while, and I think that's a great way of, I mean, it kind of describes your work. It's serving, it's relational, it's caring for others, and doing that with, you know, something that you're very connected with. and a passion of yours in trees. And so I think it's a good way to get a peek into what you're doing, particularly living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area as I do, to see such scenery and things like that. So appreciate that. This has been a great conversation. I thank you for taking time with us and sharing your story with us. And I look forward to seeing how these conversations bring encouragement to you and hopefully make your story a little bit more known to other people and that want to participate in contributing and encouraging in whatever way with you. So I've been talking with Blake Birchfield, a church planter, disciple maker in South Dakota among the Lakota people. And this has been our second part of our conversation. If you missed the first part, please go back and find that part one. So thank you for listening. And we're thankful for Blake and Katie and their family for their great work in South Dakota.
Thanks for listening to this discipleship conversation. We invite you to share this episode and tune in next time for another conversation. We also invite you to subscribe and rate the podcast through your favorite podcast app. We'd love to hear from you. Send your comments and questions to media@missionalive.org. Check out the episode show notes and learn more about the podcast and other Mission Alive media resources at missionalive.org/media. Intro and outro music is by Audionautix.com. Mission Alive works to bring about the holistic transformation of marginalized communities through starting and renewing innovative churches that address the most challenging issues faced by their neighbors. Learn more about what we do and how to connect at missionalive.org.